Man, you're making awesome questions. Did you know that you were the first one to say, okay, I bought your book, I want to support you guys?
Hello all, welcome back to the show. Today we're going to be talking about Prometheus, and we've got Joel Bastos with us. Joel is a senior infrastructure architect at Farfetch. Hey Joel, how are you, man?
I'm fine, how about you?
Yeah, good, thanks. It's a pleasure to speak to you. And we've known each other for, 8 years, maybe?
About eight years.
And it's really pleasing to see how far along you have come in your career. You've grown so much and you went already for so many jobs. And it's really, really a good pleasure to see you in such a high demanding role right now. And I'm pleased that you continue to be connected with infrastructure. That's very rewarding to see you grow.
You're too kind. And once again, thank you so much for having me here. It's a privilege. I'll tell you that.
I was hoping you could start by sharing a little bit about your background, your story, and how did you get here?
Yeah, funny enough, everything started by my interest and love for security. In my previous university, I spent a lot of time digging around on InfoSec topics, and that led me to Linux and was like an explosion of information I got into. It was amazing to see the free knowledge available in the community, and when I had any doubts I could jump into IRC and someone will help me. Like, that really stuck with me, so I decided to start giving back to the community. And I don't know if you know, but I'm kind of an deep down introvert, so I really don't like to public speak and stuff like that. So I try to compensate with writing. So I already wrote an article for a free magazine about hashing collisions and GPU attack vectors, so security related. I was working on with the InfoSec community, and my blog, which I've been featured several times on DevOps Weekly, if you know the newsletter, and some presentations as well.
Well, congratulations. And you and Pedro Araújo got together to write a book on Prometheus.
Yeah, that one was like insane. And yeah. I'm very lucky that Pedro jumped aboard on that project.
Let's talk a little bit about that later in the episode. But first, let's get going with this. So I was hoping you could give us just an overview of what is Prometheus, what are its main features. I understand that it's got a very specific data model. It's got some query language that that is also specific to it, follows very or slightly different approach to traditional telemetry and metric system. So why don't you give us just a general overview, and then maybe we can dig down and go into some questions about specific topics.
Okay, so why did Prometheus born? Several guys, ex-Googlers, when they left Google, they felt the necessity to have something that matched the monitoring system that Google had, called BorgMon. BorgMon is the monitoring for Borg that we have the open source equal, that is Kubernetes. Meanwhile, Google already has a completely different observability stack and not monitoring only, called Monarch. But back then, they needed something like BorgMon. So several guys like Bjorn Rubenstein, Julius Voltz, and Brian Brazil get together and starting working on that project. The first version came off SoundCloud, and then it just went everywhere, and everybody started to use. Do you know what's the Cloud Native Compute Foundation?
No, I don't.
So when you have a big open source project, you can donate that project to that foundation. That foundation will take care of paying all the bills related with the project, as long as it has the right quality and standards. There's several levels that the project can go on that.
It's like the foundation. Apache Foundation? Is it similar?
It's a bit, yeah. Okay. Something like that. The first project to graduate from the CNCF, Cloud Native Compute Foundation, was Kubernetes. And the second one was Prometheus. that got graduated in 2018. I was myself in Aarhus in PromCon, the conference for Prometheus in Munich, and got announced, and that was like the last validation everybody needed to understand that battle-tested technology that everybody can use. So it was completely born in a cloud-native world. Wow. That's what I'm trying to get at. Regarding like specific details, you always have the push versus pull flame war. There's no way around it.
So as I understand it, Prometheus is on the pull side, right? So the way Prometheus works is that it's deployed in an infrastructure and it just goes and does discovery and pulls metrics from whatever. So why is it that they chose that that approach?
Reliability. So for example, push is awesome for firewall transversal. So you want to go through NAT to get to internet or something like that. So SaaS vendors truly love push. Definitely. Although pull is great for detecting missing targets. For example, in push, how do you know an instance went down or was purposely decommissioned? But when you do pull, you know that. You don't have, you have that information in service discovery. Push can be affected by a thundering herd effect. Pull, you have that control on the server side and you can decide how to handle that pressure.
One of the interesting things about Prometheus is its data model. Do you want to share a bit about how different is the data model from the previous ones from OpenTSDB or from Graphite, for example?
The data model is not that different. So you have key value pairs that in Prometheus land, it's called labels.
Okay.
You have a metric name that internally is nothing more than an extra label with dunder name dunder. You're still going to have the problems with unbound cardinality on those labels if you choose to use something like an email address, username, or a request ID. You're going to have a bad time. And then you have in each one of the metrics that you collect a sample. And a sample is nothing more than a float 64 and a millisecond precision timestamp.
Okay, so let me ask you a question there about the data model and more specifically the data storage. So Prometheus is a time series database, right? So it doesn't, or does it use something else underneath Prometheus? It's both. Okay, so tell me about that then.
So Prometheus, the simplest way to describe it is a single Golang binary and a config file, and you are set up to run Prometheus. That's it. In a single node, obviously. The time series database is, while Prometheus collects data because it's a pool model and gets the data from its targets via HTTP, it scrapes those targets, stores that information in memory for 2 hours, and you're going to ask me, okay, but if you have a failure in that server, what's going to happen? There's a write-ahead log that prevents losing data. And after those 2 hours, that data is written to disk into what they call the block. It's a bunch of chunks that have all the time series and an index, an inverted index, so you can query using the labels that you collected. That's pretty much it. So it's files in disk divided in blocks of 2 hours. With all the time series for those 2 hours. So you can take that and put it in another place. And I'm just talking about using the local storage for Prometheus because there's other stuff that we can talk.
So tell us more about the overview of the mostly used components around a Prometheus ecosystem then.
Okay, so you are storing metrics. You can visualize them on an interface called Explore. And it's using PromQL. PromQL is a language that allows you to... It was built for Prometheus specifically, and it's becoming a standard across everything. So big vendors, big cloud vendors, providing observability, and in this particular case, monitoring, are offering that interface so you can use the same query language everywhere. But usually what people do is using Grafana as a visualization layer. You just add a data store in Grafana pointing to your Prometheus server, and you can generate dashboards you want using PromQL. That PromQL is also used to create alerting. And for the alerting, you have a component called Alert Manager. And now you are seeing like this becoming an ecosystem. You have Grafana if you want to have pretty dashboards. You have Prometheus as the core collecting and storing data. And you have Alert Manager for alerts. Alert Manager is a very, very beautiful piece of software. You can create several instances. They'll create a gossip between all the nodes. And they will duplicate alerts when received. They can group alerts. They can create inhibitions. Like if a whole data center goes down, you say, if this alert comes in, all the alerts for that data center stops being sent. That's amazing to stop noise. There's an advanced alert routing. So you can say exactly which team will receive a page or an email or a Slack. And there's also the possibility for you to create your integrations. Like we've created one that every single alert gets stored in Elasticsearch. And that's pretty easy to do because what Alert Manager does is send a post with a JSON payload. You just need to catch that and do whatever you want with it.
Yeah. So is the Alert Manager a separate component from that Go binary? So the Alert Manager, what does it continuously query
the Okay, that's a misconception that everybody has. That's a great question. So Alert Manager, the only job Alert Manager has is routing alerts. That's it.
Okay.
Full period. Now, evaluating expressions, that happens on the Prometheus server. You'll create something called a recording rule. In this case, it's an alert rule, but they are very similar. That is a PromQL expression that gets run cyclically. And if it ever triggers or if it has values, it will make Prometheus shoot a post with a JSON payload to Alert Manager so we can do its job.
So Alert Manager is just dispatching the alerts to the right places, but it's not actually doing that. Because I was going to ask you, you talked about the multi-node setup for Alert Manager. You're talking about having some gossip protocols, having the ability to deduplicate the messages coming in, I suppose, from Prometheus. But my understanding is that Prometheus is really more designed for this single node stack, which is meant to scale vertically. So maybe we can talk a little bit about that. No?
Yeah.
So I don't have the right understanding about the Prometheus. Man,
you're making awesome questions. for starting this discussion, Prometheus doesn't have the concept of clustering. There's non-existent. There's nothing of clustering in Prometheus by design, because when you enter distributed systems, you're going to get hurt. And as this is critical for monitoring, there's nothing cluster-wise regarding Prometheus. But what you usually do is having multiple instances of Prometheus scraping exactly the same data. So you have redundancy. Even if one goes down, you still have the data on the other one. But this creates a problem. That is, if you have the recording rules or the alert rules in both, they'll both dispatch the same alerts. That's why Alert Manager does the duplication. And even in the gossip ring, if there's a network split or something like that, the default behavior for Alert Manager is to send multiple alerts, one for each side of the split.
I see.
So all the design is to ensure you get notified. That's the top priority. Regarding scale, one way to tackle it is to shard. You can create a shard just collect metrics for applications. You can create a shard just for metrics coming from infrastructure components.
Sorry, but when you say shard there, are you talking about... a separate Prometheus deployment, or is it inside the same Prometheus deployment that you shard the data collection into different
totally instances? Different Prometheus server.
So shard from my infrastructure point of view, I've got applications, I've got servers, I've got some containers running, and I shard it in a way that the application data goes into a Prometheus installation, container telemetry and metrics go into another one, and maybe databases go into another. Is that what you're kind of exactly describing?
And there's always the edge case that you have so many targets from one kind. For example, infrastructure metrics, you have, like, imagine 10,000, 100,000 nodes.
Mm-hmm.
It's all infrastructure. So usually what people will do is just scale vertically the Prometheus instance. But you have an alternative that is using a hash map and using that hash map to distribute the load across multiple Prometheus instances. So there's that option as well.
So how does that work? Isn't that the concept of clustering then being applied? Can you tell us more about that?
Because in the end, you'll have multiple Prometheus scraping exactly the same information. So there's no connectivity between Prometheus servers. They don't know about each other. There's no communication.
So where does the hash map come in then?
It's the definition that you use to say which machines you want certain Prometheus server to scrape.
Okay. So Prometheus is by itself, it has a limit, right? So it has a limit on how many metrics it can scrape, how many metrics it can store. So what are those limits? Do you know?
The biggest Prometheus server I've seen running was ingesting 1 million data points per second. Wow. I've seen that. One instance. No sharding, no nothing.
And that must create a huge storage and memory as well, because if you're saying that Prometheus keeps 2 hours of... So 2 hours data. Of 1 million data points a second, how much is that? I can't calculate that in my head. But that's a huge amount.
The machine was pretty big, one of the biggest on the cloud provider. But I saw that happening. Obviously, you shouldn't do this. You should split and create the shards that you want. And the next thing that will happen, because we are starting to talk about scale, is imagine you have two Prometheus scraping exactly the same targets. If you restart one and you do a query that ends in that particular Prometheus, you'll have a gap.
Right?
So there's another component that you might or not use if you want. It's called Thanos. That's trying to solve that specific problem and a couple more. Thanos is like a layer over Prometheus. You get a sidecar running close to the Prometheus server. You have that sidecar will take care of seeing the blocks hitting the disk and will take care of answering queries from another Thanos component called query. With this, you have Thanos sidecars in every single Prometheus. They will collect the queries, pass it through to the Prometheus servers, and the query Thanos node will do the duplication and ensure you only get right data.
I see. So you run the query on all servers at the same time. You got a layer there that deduplicates and fills in any gaps of servers that miss that. Okay.
Understood. Another benefit is that if you use Prometheus as is, you'll be limited by the disk of the machine for the blocks.
By the disk is in, oh, but size, speed, what do you mean?
Usually the problem will be size.
Size, okay.
And imagine that you want to store a year. It's going to be a massive data request. So what you can do is using the Thanos sidecar. It will consume those blocks, send it to blob storage, and then you can use another component from the Thanos ecosystem to go to blob storage and get that data and retrieve it for the Thanos query. So query can query the Thanos sidecar and the store nodes that connect to storage, blob storage. That is dirty cheap. So yeah. That's probably the way most people at scale will do this.
Wow, okay. So let me see if I understand that correctly. When you talk about the blob storage, are you talking about something like S3 or Google blob storage? Okay. Excellent. So that's like file storage, right? You take a file and you ship it there. So how does Thanos know kind of the file structure on the blob storage destination?
It will get the index of those blocks. And with those index, it basically has a map of all the chunks. And when we do a query, you just look up where it has to pull the data.
So is Thanos doing the evaluation of that data, or is it still that blob being loaded into Prometheus and Prometheus executing the query?
No, Thanos will do the processing. In this case, the Thanos query component.
Sounds like retention is not really a limitation in Prometheus, because you can just offload the storage with Thanos, okay.
Because if you want to scale without using Thanos, you can. You can use, for example, Federation, that is having a tree-like structure where Prometheus in the top layer scrape certain metrics from the Prometheus in the lower layer, and you can divide everything the way you see fit. But when you're talking about maintaining the metrics for a long time, like long-term storage, you should use something like Thanos. There's several engines, to be honest. But so far, we are pretty happy. One thing I've started to say, and don't get me wrong, is that Prometheus is the new Nagios. I'm saying this in the best way possible.
Because it nags you?
No, it's... Okay, Nagios, before being Nagios, was NetSaint. But Prometheus currently has the same simplicity and being used everywhere, like is a standard monitoring system for Kubernetes.
But that doesn't sound like a good thing, because it wasn't one of the Prometheus objectives to eventually become a Nagios replacer.
No. Well, when I say something like this, I'm saying about the ease of use and having so many people using it. I remember a time that everybody was writing Nagios checks. Nowadays, I see everybody running exporters for Prometheus. So I can trace like the similarities in community-wide between the two, although they are completely different.
So what's an exporter in Prometheus?
Okay, one exporter is something that you write that collects data and exposes in the Prometheus format, in HTTP.
So you can write... So in my service, I can write something that exposes my metrics in a way that then is compatible to Prometheus.
You have two options. If it's your code, you can instrument, and you have libraries for Prometheus for pretty much every single language that is currently being used. If you cannot instrument, you can use an exporter. For example, if you want to collect metrics from machines, you can use Node Exporter if it's Linux based, and that exporter, it's doing something very simple, that is going to /proc, getting all the information and exposing directly into HTTP in the format Prometheus is expecting. You have exporters for Windows, for MySQL, for Redis, Rabbit, you name it, someone definitely already wrote it.
So one of the biggest issues with OpenTSDB and InfluxDB, and GraphiTees isn't really an issue because it's not really a feature, is the problem with cardinality. Like I said, you've got labels in Prometheus. I think in OpenTSDB, I think they're tags, and InfluxDB, I can't remember. But it's a key value essentially associated to a metric. You've got these variants, and one of the issues is, like you said, if you put an email address into one of these tags, that can quickly become a huge list, and you know, might be a container ID, for example, creates the same thing. So how does then Prometheus deal with that when you're making queries? How is that data aggregation model? How does that work?
You're going to have the same problem with cardinality using Prometheus or InfluxDB. It will definitely kill you. But there's a way to go around it. And talking about querying Prometheus itself, you can select match select the labels that you want, and Prometheus will return three types of data. An instant vector, that is a set of time series containing a single sample for each time series, all sharing the same timestamp, or a range vector that is similar, but it has a range of data points over that period of time that you're querying. Finally, you have a scalar, that is a simple numeric float point value. That is the data that you can get from Prometheus. And then you have all the functions built in the language that can manipulate that data the way you want.
I see. So if I'm making a query, I essentially, my query gives me access to all of the raw data points. And then
exactly.
I've got functions where I can say, well, add all of these up or select the max or average or P90 maybe.
We've got quantiles.
Quantiles, okay.
For example, there are several types of metrics. There are counters, gauges, histograms, and summaries. Histograms and summaries, in summaries, they are pretty much the same, but summaries also provides a total count of observations and the sum of all observed values.
Mm-hmm.
Between counter and gauge, I guess you know exactly what this means, but the deal is counters are the best friends for everybody, because as Prometheus scrapes data continuously, like in 30 seconds, minute by minute, you want to ensure if you have a counter, the next scrape will catch the counter on a different level. But if you are using gauges, you can hypothetically lose a spike if the spike occurs between two scrapes. So counters are awesome in Prometheus land.
Yeah, and with counters, does Prometheus offer a way to manage overflows in the sense that if you've got a counter on that you're collecting that essentially goes over and is reset back to zero, how does Prometheus handle that behavior?
I don't know if this is similar to what you are aiming for, but the counter will reset if your application restarts or something like that, and the rates will work accordingly. Using the rate functions is the only way to use counters appropriately.
So I think so. Probably what happens is that the rate function itself has a mechanism to detect that there's been a counter reset. There you go.
That's true.
Yeah, we've talked about tags, cardinality. I understand now that Prometheus essentially gives you access to the raw data points. You can apply, manipulate that with functions to get your ultimate value. So that's on the consuming side of things. But in the metrics world, things like StatsD have been invented, and they are still useful in the sense that they for anyone listening out there, something like StatsD, what it does is that it keeps a bunch of metrics in memory, and then every 10, 15, 20 seconds, it rolls them up into maybe 5, 6, whatever the definitions are, data points. And those are the ones that get stored. And those 5 or 6 might be the average, a counter, P90, something like that. So is that something that still makes sense in the... You're shaking your head, but you have to say no, right? Because this is only audio.
I was waiting you to pitch.
No. So that doesn't make sense anymore in the Prometheus world.
No, in Prometheus.
Why not?
Because you have the raw data always on your side. So you can apply those averages, those percentiles, and everything that you need against that raw data.
Okay.
So there's no aggregation then outside of the engine. And that's
but isn't that because the engine itself is only pulling data, so therefore it already expects data to be aggregated, though? We've got 1,000 requests per second, and I want to see the average time, response time of that endpoint. But Prometheus is only coming to collect every 10 seconds. So how do I get that sample of the average response time on that service?
You can use an histogram, for example. Maybe that will help you get information that you want.
Okay, cool. So I want to just get your opinion on something else. Generally, and that's before we jump into your book, okay? Because I still want to ask questions, and we've been talking so actively for a while now. But in terms, give me your give me your opinion about who is Prometheus for, right? You know, we've talked about scaling, it's peculiar in the way scaling works. You've got vertical, you've got sharding appeals and so on. But I am very used, and I know that you are as well, because of everything that work, we're very used to seeing really large telemetry systems where you've got one central system, big Hadoop cluster on the background, and then you've got a single thing where you see that. Is Hadoop, is Prometheus meant to replace something like that? Or is Hadoop, sorry, not Hadoop.
Is Prometheus, I got it.
Yeah. So tell us about that, right? I mean, who is Prometheus for? What is it trying to achieve?
Okay. Like I said in the beginning, Prometheus is heavily inspired in BorgMon. And BorgMon was the monitoring system for Google. So they have some size, and that's like an indication. But right now you have companies like Uber, Red Hat, DigitalOcean, Cloudflare, GitLab, all of them using Prometheus at scale. And in the case of Cloudflare, you can imagine collecting data from all the POPs they have for their CDN.
Wow.
Prometheus is very good to start quickly and have something to show for it. But if you dedicate the time to understand how everything works, the components that are available, and how to connect all of them, you can scale to your heart's desire.
Right, I see. That's a really good way. So if I was to, you know, if I had a really large infrastructure that needed instrumenting, would you recommend something like that? Because there's also like other SaaS alternatives. I mean, Statful being one of them. But you've got Datadog and New Relic and all of those things. I mean, are those like in the same realm, or are they completely separate, right?
Why not both? And why I'm saying this, Prometheus has another couple of features I didn't mention yet. That is remote write and remote read. So you can use Prometheus as a storage for something to read from it, and you can push the data Prometheus is collecting to another endpoint. Currently, you mentioned New Relic and Sysdig, all of them provide you a remote write endpoints, so you can push all the metrics to those SaaS providers if you do not want to maintain the complexity of managing the data stored inside and having like a global view of all Prometheus servers and shards and whatnot. There's a price. So you just need to validate what makes sense in your case.
Yeah, although, I mean, there's always a price, right? I mean, if you don't go for a SaaS service, and if you You'll choose to manage that yourself, you're paying for that. Sometimes it's hard to see where that price is. But I think that's enough of going into the details. And thank you so much for you know, just answering some of the questions. I know I was a bit nagging you a little bit on some of the topics there. But let's hear about your book, right? You and Pedro decided to get together. So tell us about the story. Like, what got you guys inspired to write this book? And who is this book for?
Okay, so how all of this began? Remember the security part that led me to Linux, and then all my career was around that. The first thing I felt when the publisher came to me was, this is a phishing attack. Doesn't make any sense. Like, I don't believe this. So I did my homework and found out that he was truly a publisher and found me from my blog and PromptCon. I was working full-time, so there's no way I could do this on my own. I talked with Pedro Rouge, my co-author. I have the utmost respect for the guy, and he's the most technical savvy engineers I know. And I talked with him and told him what was going on. He also didn't believe it. I talked with the publisher to see if we could do the book together. He agreed. So I scheduled a meeting with them, told them our expectations, they told them their expectation, and finally he opened up and said that Brian Brazil was going to be the tech reviewer. So he's the maintainer and core contributor. So if we have someone like him reviewing our work, there is no excuse, we should try it. And Brian is a very busy guy. He has his company, Robust Perception, always doing services around Prometheus ecosystem. and it was inviolable during the reading phrase. The book is for professionals and novices alike. As long as you have like a slight understanding of networking and like the basis, I guess anyone can pick it up and run with it. We focused on the book on VMs and containers alike, so we can reach a broader audience because everybody wants to use Kubernetes.
Mm-hmm.
And as not everybody has access to a cloud provider, we ensured all the test labs could run locally on the machines. And there's nothing that you need to pay. You don't need a contract. You don't need to pay an instance outside of your home lab. And that's pretty much it. That's the way everything started. Just an email.
And how long did it took you guys from that initial email? Where it, but I'm curious. So how long was that before you got the book published?
So you want metrics, right?
Metrics, of course. I want an average response time from you. That's it. That's exactly it.
I did a rough back of the envelope math, and I guess we spent about 1,500 man hours.
Oh,
on this.
Oh, okay.
Across more than 400 pages, and we built 11 open source labs that everybody can use. It's really available on GitHub. But it's awesome to contribute to community. That's the main objective.
That's really good. And would you do it again if another editor came to you on a different subject?
This is kind of funny, but it already did. I got a request. We obviously got invited to write another book on a different topic, a very cool one, service meshes. But like this adventure of writing the book, we first talked with our family and friends and explained the situation and got feedback from them before taking the final decision, because this takes a lot of a person. Having a full-time job, you just have nights and weekends that you have to fully dedicate to this, so you won't be spending with the people that you love. Let this one pass. Like my blog is missing me. I haven't write anything useful in the last year or perhaps more, so I want to start giving back again to the community on the blog side, and after that, who knows. But cool. it was a good experience. Like
I'm happy to hear that.
The right way.
I'm happy to hear that, and I did not knew, but thank you for sharing that you're funneling any gains from that into a local charity. I think that's so righteous, man. Like that's such a righteous thing to do. I cannot just great it is to hear you talk like
this. This is my opinion.
Yeah.
If your motivation to do something like this is money, you're going to hate yourself, because this requires a really hard focus and self. You need to take things that you take for granted away from you just to do this.
Joel, it's been a really big pleasure having this conversation with you. Thank you so much for the
pleasure,
for
all of mine.
Again, like it's so inspiring to see someone like you that gave so much of your own life to put something like to put a book like this out there and just talk so passionately about giving back to the community. That is really, really inspiring to see. I hope that people that are listening to this can get that.
You are way too kind.
I'm really not fully deserved. Well, thank you so much for being on the show.
No, thank you. And don't forget, try to make a call with everybody together. That one would be awesome.
We should definitely do that.
Yeah, we should.